In life's vast, uncertain terrain, a wanderer found joy in the rain. No map, no direction, just pure introspection. And now he's ready to champion others. Everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up. I am glad you're here to join me. This podcast has had quite the tumultuous lifespan, so to say. And tonight I plan on doing a reset. You see, I'm creating this new venture along with my business partner, Big John, is what we call him. 6'4", like 250 pounds. It's taken me away from podcasting as I build podcast teams. I'm laying out the game plan with the pitch deck, business plan, budget that goes into business plan that we also use daily, et cetera, dealing with everyday problems. And it's kind of taken me away from all this because for the simple fact, I love building a business, but I also love podcasting, but when I podcast, my research is so intense. Even people who know me will tell you, yeah, with William, man, if he's talking about it, saying it, it's true. He will find the data to back that up, and that is very true. So I wanted to do a bit of a reset tonight because I'm getting a lot of pushback from friends and relatives. William, why are you doing this? You're Latino. You shouldn't be saying some of the things you do. They're going to think you're racist, you know. And there's a reason I am who I am, why I preach and I expose hate on both sides. The downside is there's so much hate from the left, and the hate is built on elitist understanding the triggers of human nature, one being feelings, better known as emotion, and the power of the emotion of hate, and the power of the emotion of portraying yourself as a victim, because that kind of validates and promotes and pushes your hate to a different level. And that's what progressives and Democrats are today. And those who aren't tend to be smarter, more highly educated, and they just can't fathom how working class people truly live. Now, those who have gone from working class to elite status, at least financially, they do understand, and they're the ones who could speak up, but don't. And why? Why rock the boat? Lose your little circle of friends. Lose the invites to the big bashes, the parties. Well, all that's happened to me, and I don't give up. And I can't finish a word, but my dad would have, old 30-year-old or 30-year Army man. So I'm looking to do a reset today and to explain to you why I am here, why I am battling that fight, and what will happen if you don't. So first of all, before we get going, let me tell you where you can find this podcast. You can, if you're listening to it, you found it. But for those who may not know who we are, my name is William Del Pilar. I am a conservative Latino, and this is the Fired Up Podcast. You can find this podcast along with our sports, other political show, and entertainment/pop culture show. Now, the sports is pure sports, but the politics and the pop culture, we actually talk politics, hardcore politics, ranging from the reality of what's happening. There's no sugarcoat. In fact, I've gotten into plenty of arguments with my libertarian partner about conservatism, about his issues, and how I see them, how they really relate to the world. And I say that as somebody who's gone to 30-some-odd countries, have lived life. Life is an adventure. Or I'm sorry, life is a journey. Make it an adventure. But back, because I digressed again, but back to where you can find us. You can find us on grumblingsmedia.com, as well as YouTube and Rumble under Grumblings Media profile name, and your traditional podcast outlets under the same profile name of Grumblings Media. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, and Google. And we're going to expand that. You know, we're going to have more video platforms we're going to go on. We started live streaming, so there's a lot of fun. So let's get down to this. So first of all, I am, as I have said, a conservative Latino. My Latino culture never came before being an American first, period. End of story on that. I was always American first. Something a little bit funny about myself, though. When I was in Panama, I was more American because everybody was Panamanian. So when events came up, I would gravitate to the American because he was just the underdog in a room full of relatives, family and friends, you know, all rooting for the Panamanian. Usually it was boxing that we were watching. But then when I was in the States, I was very, very positive and rooted for Panamanians because, again, everybody behind me is American rooting for that. I don't know why it's like that with me. I think it's the underdog in me. I've always been the underdog. The red train that went up the hill, the choo-choo that could, or whatever that little red train book is. But so maybe that's why I relate to it. However, being Latino never came first over being American. Until I went to college and I left Fayetteville, North Carolina, which we call Fayetteville, because the proximity in time of the 70s and 80s with the Vietnam War, and it was literally a transit station, Fort Bragg was, for troops. In fact, my circle of friends, and they were probably more diverse than anybody has ever had who's listening to this podcast. My friends were Lumbee Indian, Black, Asian, Japanese, if I remember correctly. May have been a Korean in there, but Japanese. Here I am trying to break that down. Let's see what else. Myself, Latino, and we had a white guy. You know, and other friends came in and out, but they were one or the other. And that was our circle of friends. And we never, and being in a military town, I have come to learn is a blessing. People love to rag on the military. You want your child to grow up without this tribalism? Put them in a, join the military. Our whole street was so diverse. You know, so we never thought about race or things of that nature as they do today. Not that that wasn't present, but we never talked about it. We were friends and race didn't matter to us. Most of them didn't even realize I was Latino. I am Latino, Puerto Riqueño, Panameño. I speak, read, and write Spanish. And I taught myself how to write Spanish more than in school ever did because I was brought up in American schools in English. I grew up speaking Spanglish. You know, it cracked me up when, 10, 15, 20 years ago, they were talking about Ibanez. It needs to be made an official language. I was like, how derogatory can you be towards a whole culture by making a terrible slang into an actual language? And the slang's never meant to be treated that way. You know, that's pretty much what it was. Well, no, it wasn't slang. It was, maybe it was. I can't remember. But my point is, Spanglish was around a lot longer than Ebonics, or was it Ebonics? Was it than Ebonics ever was, you know? But I grew up speaking Spanglish, but English, as I said, was the predominant language that I went to American schools, as most American citizens do. I spoke English at school and Spanish at home. It was easier because my mother barely knew English. The truth of the matter is we all spoke Spanish except to our dad growing up, you know? And, you know, he was very Americanized, Puerto Rican, you know, Spanish is his first language, but he learned English, and you could not even tell he had an accent. My father actually got fired from his first job stateside because his cousin got him the job, cousin or uncle got him the job, and when the supervisor would come and tell him to do something, his cousin would be nearby listening, and all my dad did was nod. Well, that only lasted a few days before they figured out, man, this bro here don't know English, and they fired him. I love telling that story because my dad went on to learn English, speaks it perfectly well, and made E9 in 14 years. And those of you who are lifers, you right now you're saying, bull bleep. No, 14 years. My sister, I have not confirmed this. My sister says my father was the first Latino to make E9 in these United States of America. You know, so I will look that up one day, but I'm proud of that. Anyway, my belief system, that was my upbringing. or my background rather, but my belief system. I do believe in where there's a will, there's a way. I hate it when people say we can't do this because of this or that. And then I look at what this or that is and I, yeah, we can. We as Americans have become so lazy. Any little obstacle is an excuse not to do something. That's why you only get there's a small percentage. What, you know, once you hit the 10%, you're earning a few hundred thousand a year and the rest of America you left behind. It's not hard to get to that level, yet the numbers show that it's difficult. But it's only difficult because we're no longer being taught how to critically think. We're no longer being taught to push through things. Even our sports are being womanized. You know, so I've always believed where there's a will, there's a way. And I learned some of this through the challenges of military. I did some serious stuff in the military. I worked to learn all aspects of business at a nonprofit organization purposely, not because it was nonprofit, because it was a small five-man shop when I started there. And we helped. I was part of the team that helped build it up to a multi-million dollar budget. Where before it was maybe 100,000, you know, to when I got there, a few hundred thousand when I got there, to a multi-million dollar annual budget to over 25 employees. So I learned a lot about entrepreneurship there because you do every aspect of the job at a small business like that. And from there, I went and I became an entrepreneur. And as an entrepreneur, helping to lead, to pioneer and commercialize a brand new industry called fantasy sports, I built a team of employees. And I view them as my extended family. We were spending more time together than any person ever did from their family. And if you look at the hours of the working parent that does this, it's pretty much true in most jobs. Your work family, you kind of see more than your actual family. You don't have the same love or tie with it, but that's a simple truth. I looked at them as my extended family, and it worked out. They were indeed very, very loyal to me. You know, in fact, many of my former employees have gone on to work for sports conglomerates. That's right. You know, think of the ESPNs of the world. Well, ESPN, actually, and elsewhere. Professional teams. And many have started their own little side business. Leadership, I don't know if I'm a good leader. I was not the greatest of leader back in the past because the military drummed into me, do as I say and as I tell you, period. I don't care. You know. And when you don't look at obstacles as nothing but obstacles to overcome, you have less patience for those who may or may not be struggling. So I am still learning to be a leader. However, I would always push my individuals who work for me to give me above and beyond 100%. Teaching them and trying to mold them into learning how to critically think, how to look at and understand that big picture, how to become managers and leaders. And right now I'm working with my niece. God bless that little thing, that little skinny thing. She looks just like her mom, sounds like her mom. It's still shocking when I talk to her. And I'm harder on her, and I tell her, look, Selena, I love you to death, but I am going to be harder on you than anybody else. Do you want to flip burgers this summer, or do you want to go work in an office somewhere where they look at you and you're like, damn, that little girl knows her stuff. And she's like, oh, the little girl knows her stuff. That's right. You know? So it gives me great pleasure to be able to instill ways of improving yourself, of becoming a manager, a leader to others. And I am the type of person where the truth hurts. My family and friends, they quickly come to understand I don't sugarcoat the truth. I am not one of these guys who goes, yeah, she was that B word. Yeah, she was this. No, I'm the type of guy who's going to say, dude, what'd you do? That girl treated you like a king. What'd you bleep up that she dumped you? That's the kind of friend I am. I'm not the friend who will agree because we're friends. I consider my friends family, and I speak unvarnished truth. And having a sailor's tongue, I can tell you firsthand, my family does not like that. Even my dad has made a mention of it. But I'm like, I am who I am. I'm no longer going to change. I see the world for what it is. It's ugly, and I'm tired of sugarcoating. Because then I point to them, well, maybe if somebody hadn't sugarcoated the truth here, this wouldn't have happened to you, or that wouldn't have happened to you. And I mean that, you know. Now, that said, there's a lot of things I wish people had told me, including my family, growing up as a child. You know, because I listen to people. So I view the unvarnished truth as nothing but good. it has to be given to the person properly, and I'm still learning that too. That was one of the big, hard, ugly lessons I had to look in the mirror and realize. I was too rough on those who worked for me from 1996 to about 2006. You know, but again, I consider friends family, and I will tell them the truth as I see it. And ironically, I'm also a former elected politician in a small community. I was a small community politician. Didn't have a lot of power, but it was experience of why I ran. I wanted to see what these individuals go through. I wanted to learn Robert's rules in terms of how they conduct the meetings. I wanted to learn how these battles, how they jockey. I was pretty good at it, to be quite frank. In fact, I helped bring in new people. The current chair, Madam Chair, as I call her, the only reason she holds that office or that position is because of me. And I used to not say things like that. But politics is ugly, and those you think are your allies or your friends may turn out not to be. And it's not good or bad. It's just the way it is in that world, and it's ugly. As a politician, I learned most don't care about or listen to the people they represent, but merely use their positions to push their beliefs. Another term for beliefs with a politician is ideology. They view their constituents, to put it kind in a kind way, as too dim-witted. Most of them view you as stupid. And I saw this, and I'd get so angry. That's why I was always battling everybody. I'd be like, it's not what you want or what you think. It's what is best for and what the community wants. And their response, you know, not officially right there, but they'd always tell me to the side or they make it well known. Well, the community's too stupid, William. And these weren't just my political enemies, but my own allies as well. So politically, as well as in family disputes or my short list of tight friends, speaking truth tends to alienate you. Again, I realized all this firsthand and realized most of these politicians are beholden to only one constituency, and that is the donor base, not the actual voting base. That's why I always tell people, if you can conquer the donor base and keep the people and actually deliver on hope, you're going to be a winner. Trump and Obama come to mind. And yes, there was election fraud that happened. Hey, I've been around this game too long and studied it, including Jimmy Carter's, what was it, blue press something that came out in voting and what not to do and what to do. And he took this blueprint and went around the world. He wasn't just known for making homes for people. He was known for helping with elections. And what did he do in 2020? He tossed that book out and said, yeah, everything's kosher here. While they were breaking rules he had, that's what it was, a blue panel commission. You know, it was disgusting. Disgusting. You know, so politicians will quickly turn. I'm not a fan of Jimmy Carter. He's a bum. Maybe a good human being helping others when he wasn't president. But as a president, he was nothing but a bum, a piece of useless garbage who got Americans killed. And that's all you need to know about him. And yes, I do feel that strongly. The long gas lines. I saw this in the 70s, a very little kid wondering, wow, those poor people. Factories, seeing the big smoke, the pollution, all that stuff. You know, and I do put that on government. You know, and he's not the only one. Obama giving false hope. Look, people, especially if you're black or Latino, Obama just lied to you. From day one, this Latino knew. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. No, you couldn't. I knew that was a blatant lie. He just openly lied. I'll never forget that woman, a black woman in Detroit. Oh, he's going to be rich, he's going to be paid. Oh, my God. I was disgusted. Not because she was black, which is what some of you will say or will want to think, but because she's so damn ignorant. And she's ignorant because the school system never taught her to critically think. And that's not her. That's every American child right now. They want you ignorant and dumb. So when a politician says, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, you believe him. When a politician says, I'm going to build that wall, and doesn't, yet you still believe him and you make excuses and blame it on every frickin' buddy else. And that's right. I'm talking about Obama and Trump, and I'm a big Trump supporter. I am a Make America Great Again person because America is a beacon of light. It is the land of opportunity, and that is ceasing to exist because they want to make you a victim, and many of you are happy with that. But Trump also gave false hope. We do need tighter border security. Border security is a national issue. I'm telling you people, spies, drugs, they're all coming through there. And you know what's going to come through there? May not be our lifetime, but I think it will, a dirty bomb one day. So, yeah, the border is a national security issue. Look, they're already having issues. They've always had issues with their open borders in Europe, and they know it. You know, so another one that gets false hope is Newsom. The Democrats have been in complete power since about 2009 for sure, maybe as early as 2000, in terms of what's a supermajority, meaning what they propose will get passed no matter what. So they control the state, the Democrats do. It's a semi-authoritarian state. And the only reason I say semi is because in name only, we're a republic. But for all intents and purposes, it is an authoritarian, Democrat-led state here in California. I'm not saying that because I'm not Democrat and don't like it. I'm saying that because that's actually a fact. So Newsom blames Republicans for everything. And what's very hurtful about that? And I say hurtful and depressed is because the people believe him. And I just pull my hair out like, what the bleep is the matter with you? Again, public schools that have indoctrinated for generations now and don't teach you how to critically think. They don't teach civics anymore for a reason. If you don't know about the Constitution, how it works, that we are an actual republic, what else? If you can't get that and understand that, then you're completely lost, and they can manipulate and mold you however they please. If you don't know anything about politics, don't get involved in it, don't think you know it. Don't think you're as smart as the guy who lives it every day, breathes it, campaigns, works with campaigns, understands the laws, understands the lobbyists, all that. Yeah, I do. When I first got together with Big John, it got ugly in terms of when he started talking politics. He's an academic. You know, where I was involved in it day to day, and it quickly showed me the difference between those who think they know versus those who actually know how it works. And it's not that he's a bad person. It depresses me because I believe half of our education in high school every year, a few classes every year, should be civics classes, the government, the political parties, all in an unbiased but nothing but facts, no emotion put into the writing. To give one party favor over the other. And it can be done. It has been done in the past. Until we do that, we are going to remain an ignorant country, and we will not be long in being a superpower. And people, that is good. To have a country like the United States as the superpower is much better than a country like Brazil, than a country like Russia, than a country like China, than a country like Canada. Oh, dear God, those Canadians. The Canadian government is doing more bad for its people to the point many of their actions 20 years ago, any other country, we would have been, what they're doing to Russia, you know, hurting them financially. Oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank on the term. Sanctions. They would be littered with sanctions. That we would cut off relations. And if I was president, I would have done that with Europe, UK, and Canada. What they are doing to their people, arresting them for, they arrested a little girl, a homosexual, a gay woman cop, a little 6 or 8 year old girl was arrested because she said something about an innocent tycoon. Well, you look like something gay or something like that. Arrested her. That's authoritarianism. I don't care what the hell you say. And yeah, I've never been a fan of the Brits. Look, we had to go to war with them to win our freedom. Then we had to stop their invasion in 1812. And then we had to save their tushes in World War I. Then again in World War II. And then, I can't remember, he's a couple of prime, about five prime ministers ago during Obama's time, said it was the anniversary of World War II. And he comes out and says, thank God for America and the United Kingdom or Britain or something like that, for saving the world. Man, I was like, you? England? We saved your ass. Your own great Winston Churchill laid it out, doing everything he could to trick us into getting into the war because he knew y'all wouldn't win. if it wasn't for these United States of America. Oh my goodness. So, in essence, there's also Schwarzenegger. Look, Schwarzenegger, he may have a small sack because of all the steroids he did, but the teachers union and the other unions, they neuter that little sack. And that's when he became a leftist, because he wanted to be liked. Schwarzenegger's a bad human being. I used to idolize him. Came from Austria, self-made, beloved. Turns out he was an army deserter, fled Austria, came here, roided up, became a roided up bodybuilding champion, was involved in harassing women, sexual harassment, completely lied as a governor. He's a con man. Made some great action movies that I love to death. But once I learn who he really is, the world will be better off once he's gone. Why do I say that? The man wanted us non-vax in prison. He wanted those who broke curfews. He's lying in his mansion, not having to deal with any of this, telling us we're the ones who need to deal with it. And if we don't, we need to be punished. He's a bad human being. You know, God, yeah, it's God. I'm not even going to say that. You know. So that's who I am as an individual. I became the person I am, the military. The military made me a man. It forced me to see humanity for what it really is. It forced me to work with individuals from every part of the country, every culture, every religion, you name it, you encounter it in the military. And that was just an extension of my everyday life, a family that was black, brown, lighter brown, white, rich, well off, poor, straight, gay, bi. My whole family encompasses that. And I look at that proudly, not because there are these things, but because of the experiences I have. And God bless every one of those people. You know, I partied hard with my relative who is gay. I didn't like his lovers. Lovers are swine. And that's putting it politely. You know, I got to get to know my black cousin in Panama. Yeah, and that was a heart-wrenching and heartbreaking story that was too similar to tales you hear here. You know, so the military forced me to look at that from a professional adult perspective versus a family. It forced me to understand how exceptional we are in this, or how exceptional America is, and how lucky we are to be exceptional, to become exceptional. America is a beacon of light. We have every opportunity, whether just living, working, eating, playing, etc. Other countries don't have the basic foundations that we do to live, much less the luxuries, opportunities, and lifestyles we enjoy. It forced me to work with other countries. The military, I work with other countries. And their militaries taught me a lot about their countries. And again, how lucky. I was in an island state. I don't know why I never say the name, you know. It's like a secret, you know. I do guard my past at times, even though I am pretty open. But I was assigned in charge to work a patrol with one of the locals, a young kid. We were about the same age, early 20s. And I was worried to death he was going to pull his gun. Because he had told me, look, the drug war has gotten so bad that when cops here pull guns, they don't literally laugh at us, but they don't respect it. We are under, I can't remember if it was official command or unofficial command, that if they draw their weapon, they better have a very, very good excuse as to why they did not fire that weapon. That's how bad it had gotten in that country. It made me look at tribalism much differently. I was in a bar. I was the only light-skinned person there. And he warned me, he goes, a few of these people have never seen a white man. Their whole lives have been lived in this city, in this neighborhood. The only thing outside of black they have seen is on television. That's it. And we're not talking American black. We're talking Nubian, dark black, these people were. I went in there. You know, I wasn't even nervous. I was cautious. I was aware. Because my buddy had my back. Yeah. I had patrolled with him all day. We had talked, got into nowhere. There was no issue. This man had my back. And on the flip side, he wanted to know everything about America. you know, about me, about us, you know. And I went there, sure enough, there was one person who was asking me the questions, you know. But here's what they always ask, whether it's the people or the military, when I'm in various countries, I've been to over 30. They always ask about America. They always, and whoever the president is, there's usually somebody who'll ask. There was a Panamanian black girl who was at the church, and I was talking. It wasn't the church. They were having a class at my aunt's house. My aunt, my God bless her, my mom has helped her, and they've helped themselves by working hard, and they've gone from dirt poor to not knowing where their lives would be tomorrow to what I would call Panamanian middle class, and very religious, so they're in a class here. And it's one of those catch-22s. I'm visiting, and I get tricked. And being a nice nephew, I can't say no. It's like, oh, God. As they preach. And then quickly, the guy got me involved in a conversation, and that kind of became a group. And I got those questions. There was a young little black girl, and she related to Obama because he was black. And I saw that. And I wasn't going to destroy her dreams with my belief system. And I just, you know, I told her how he had the opportunity because of America, how great America is. And, man, the smile these kids leave you with. Because they, when you're talking to them, they get hopeful. They see oh, my God, it's America. It's true. It's a dream. It's a fantasy. And I'd never do that to break any kid's heart, you know. It was just one of those things where I speak about this country and I get asked about this country a lot. Oh, man, some good times. All right. So the military has done all that for me. If I, you know, you can't do this, but this, the greatest thing that happened to America to make us one of the elite countries in all of history, when I say elite, meaning the best, the beacon of light, the shining star for people who have lost hope, who can come here, regain hope, and not only regain hope, but become successful and live the American dream. I would make serving in the military mandatory. That's where I grew up. I have seen thousands grow up because of the military versus these punk-ass kids who go to college. And I'm not talking about liberal kids. I'm talking about any parent's kids. You know, and it'll never happen, mandatory service. But it would be one way to end the political tribalism we have because you're forced to work with everybody. I remember I was at one command, and it was about half and half in terms of minorities or different cultural backgrounds and Anglo. And I remember there was these – it was actually a very good friend of mine, very, very close friend of mine. He's Puerto Rican. And there was this other black duo. They're always fighting, you know? They're always fighting. But I got to know them so well, I could break that fight up, and they knew, man, don't mess with Dupilar. He doesn't play the street game. He wants us to do better, you know? And by better, I would go ahead, fight. Just fight right now. Knock the bleep out of each other. Because at the end of the day, everybody up the chain of command is going to see every bruise, and you're going to have to answer why, and they're not going to believe you because they're going to see the bruises and know you're fighting, and you're going to get put on restriction, lose rank, and lose money. And they knew me. They knew Dupilar will do that, you know. So they would stop fighting. They would give the tough man, you know, one guy threw the broom down that he had. He's getting ready to hit the guy, you know. Looked at me. You lucky you were outright because Dupilar walked away. And they were just blowhards, you know. And one day, one of the guys who was always getting in a fight, he was a little guy. And ironically, after this incident, and you know, all he talked about was getting out. He came up to me whispering, Petty Officer Dupilar, I need to talk to you. I go, yeah, what do you need, Exo? I'm not going to tell you his name, because I want to stay in. I just laugh, because, you know, the bravado. I'm going to get out, screw this, beat this. He was scared to get out. Because he knew at the end of the day, he had it easy in the military. It's guaranteed paycheck, benefits. It's not a rich man's life, but you have a place to sleep, place to eat, and you are taken care of with a means. You're not on the street, but you are a working class man. And so he's talking to me like that. But a couple months earlier, my boss comes to me, the LPO says, Dupilar, somebody requests a captain's mask and will write you up for being for racism. And I was angry. angry, my friends. It never went anywhere because a group of brothers, and not my Puerto Rican brethren or the Latinos there or the whites there, but the group of brothers told the individual, Templar didn't write you up because you're black. He wrote you up because you're lazy. And that's kind of where it ended. I guess after that group turned on him, he didn't write it up. And my point in saying this is the individuals who stuck up for me, they knew I was just trying to make them better. I was trying to keep them out of trouble. They knew I didn't care in terms about who and what they were. In fact, the one who hated me the most, because he eventually did go up to see the old man, because he did get in a fight with somebody. He was a dirtbag. He was your classic victim, Puerto Rican. And my friend, who was also Puerto Rican, who was tight to him, that's all that mattered. He's our brother. He's Puerto Rican. I'm like, no, he's a piece of blank. I don't care what he is. And sure enough, he was thrown out, and my friend went to visit him. He was working retail, basic sales job, and he was still holding the bitterness. So instead of actually learning something and growing from it, he held on to it, turned it into hate. And if you think he was going to move up much from being a salesperson, I got news for you. That energy, that type of personality, how they view you as not even their equal, they know better and you're just lucky to be above them. Those people don't get anywhere. They become blights on society. And that's what's happening to a good chunk of our people, whether they're white, black, or brown. But again, I would have a mandatory 3-year service. You have to go in the military. Some of the benefits would be like, hey, your college is taken care of afterwards. We have enough money to make this work. Harvard's worth billions. They don't need any federal funding, things like that. And why fund these universities? Fund the students. From there, after I got out, I knew I was not going to make it a career. I got the hell out. And I got the hell out purposely at the time I did, 6 years, because I knew had I stayed in, I would have been up at the 10, 11, 12 year mark. And at that point, you've got half time served, where it's less than the 10 years or less to get retirement. And in the military, you pick up retirement as soon as you retire. You have your active duty paycheck, the next month's your retirement paycheck. So I didn't want to be put in that situation. And I was bitter and angry. In the military, when people tell me, thank you for your service, I don't like it when they do that. Make your thanks to those who, I guess we all make a difference, but I don't like hearing that. And there are dirtbags in the military. A bunch of bad people serve. Abusive people. So it's just like a corporation. Not every service member is good, And what I have discovered, anecdotally, most former military that are liberal, they weren't good soldiers, sailors, or Marines. So from there, I went into a small business, into a couple of nonprofits. And that's where I learned about entrepreneurship while working at a nonprofit. And it wasn't because it was a nonprofit I learned about entrepreneurship, just because it was a small company. I managed events, fundraisers. I managed them, but I had a boss who was directly responsible for them. I was a right-hand man, so I did all the grunt work. She did it. And I'm lying. She did a lot of grunt work. We did it together. But I was obviously her right-hand man, the man everybody would meet, see, whether it was putting the tents up the poles to making sure we were set to go to a meeting. The only times I was not with her or allowed to be with her were with donor meetings, and I regret that now that I'm in politics, because her and the executive director were handling the donor meetings. Everything else I was involved in. I actually pushed this nonprofit into the modern era by managing their whole computer system, by things of that nature. In essence, we were on a shoestring budget. We had little to work with as a nonprofit, but we succeeded and had significant success because we raised more money than we ever had, not only through donors, but through these events. See, when I put an event on, I think big. I put on phenomenal political forums and debates because I think big. Everything's big in my eyes. It's an event. When you come to that event, I want you to come. Damn, I'm having a good time here. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Or you leave. I like what that guy over there did, honey. And we were able to do that, translate that into money. And we went from a five-man show to, when I left, a 25-man show. And the reason I left was because I started my own business. Oh, man. So, starting my own business was a combination of the military background allowing me to be my own boss because I was the boss of others. Sometimes I'd be away from any other bosses with my team. I pushed superiors at the nonprofit to keep their promise. Again, the military, you know, I looked at them, you're my boss, but well, that's all. You made this promise, or we need this, or we need that. You're the boss. You're the guy I have to go to. You know, and the reason I was able to do that is because we were successful at bringing money in. You know, I had brought the company from a pathetic internet site to the modern age with forums and groups to help the people where we were helping them. So I put everything online that they were doing in-house for people who couldn't make it or had a question or needed information. You know, at the nonprofit, I was able to help develop programs that raise funds that the national, our parent organization, actually took those, some of those ideas. You know, let me take that back. We use volunteers because everybody who had worked with the volunteers, who were no-nonsense people, taught me a lot about volunteers. The biggest and greatest lesson being volunteers are simply unpaid employees when they choose to volunteer. And the individual's point to me was, I kind of found it hard to go, hey, I need you to do this. You kind of said you would. He says to the point, hey, Joe, man, I'm having a good time. It's great to see you here, but we need to get this done. That's what you're here for. So we have to get that done. Once that's done, hey, let's go play. You know, and I could do it in a friendly enough way to get done. You know, so we use our volunteers more effectively versus being a social media outlet or social outlet, rather. We push, again, the superiors to keep the promises they rarely kept. And our success came despite not having the money of traditional corporations. You know, so that's what, from the military helped me build up that nonprofit along with the rest of the people involved. I didn't go there and save that. I was just part of the team that helped build it out. And then from there, the nonprofit combined with the military, I was able to live the American dream. You know, one day I realized I'm never going to enjoy many aspects of the American dream. Financial security in case there's an emergency, being my own true boss, taking vacations when my wife and I, when the family wants, not when we could afford them. Holidays with the family when we wanted, meaning, well, I got to see if I can take time off from noise. None of that. And then the pricing, you know, going on holiday vacations or visiting family and friends, not when we could. Oh, I'll do next year. I can't do this year because of money. And it wasn't that I wanted to be rich. It's like I was like, man, to enjoy life, to make this journey an adventure, this job at this nonprofit isn't going to cut it. And for a good reason. A lot of people who do well at nonprofits abuse it. They have what I call the savior complex. I used to call it the white savior complex. But there are many minorities who work in the social service industry. I mean, go to one big urban city and you see that there. But these people, they consider themselves saviors. So they want to take as much money, whether it's through expenses, whether it's through coming in late, leaving early. That's sadly a typical social service worker that has put in the years. They're just tired and burnt out. I was not going to be that person. You know, so I jumped ship from having a boss to living the American dream. Before I lived the American dream, let me explain what I call the prelude to madness. Because living the American dream for a few years, I worked 18 to 22 hour days every single day. And my wife can vouch for that. If you saw me at an event that wasn't work related, you knew her claws were out and you're coming. Yeah. Yeah. So, but as far as what led me to the American dream, before when laptops came out, they were expensive, thousands of dollars. And one day in college, I was in the computer science room and there was this program called Netscape. And it allowed you to browse something new, the internet. Now, the internet wasn't new, but it was finally becoming available to the masses. And one reason was because of Netscape. AOL and others had been around. But Netscape brought you directly to the internet. AOL brought you to what I call the biggest social media platform ever to exist because AOL was its own self-contained world and the internet was a different being. Not many people really understand that. You know, so it opened the door to the commercialization of the internet. And I dreamed. But my friends, I dreamed. The voice you're supposed to talk in. About bringing fantasy sports to the masses. It was only a dream, and one day the better half, knock on wood, I've been with her, oh gosh, I think it's going to be 30 years next year. Or this year. This year. I always forget the 1 year off. Because we were married on December 31st. So I get confused on the year. That's a year. You know, but this year will be 30 years. Now, she didn't, you know, so I'm working on my fantasy team. My fantasy football team, to be more specific. And she hollers out because I'm not spending time with her in my little, you know, between school and working a day job full time. You know, I didn't have much time, so she wanted to spend on her. She says, why don't you figure out a way to make money doing that? Now, she did not say it out of love, but sarcasm with a hint of anger. Yet it was a catalyst. Even before I graduated, I recruited partners and we started our own company. Eventually, I became the majority owner, and I am blessed with living the American dream, only in America, of helping to pioneer commercialize what is now a multi-billion dollar industry with thousands and thousands, maybe tens of thousands of jobs that are in that industry. So you're damn right I'm proud. Now, the tale of my escapades in that industry, oh my God, you could make a movie out of it. And I say that proudly, it'd be one of those comedy dramas. But that's a tale for another day. You know, by helping them pioneer, commercialize a new industry, made a world of difference and a big impact on me, especially in what you can do in this country. And we did not have a lot of money. We were a shoestring budget too, but I had experience in that aspect. You know, we had disputes amongst ourselves. I've been in that with the military, you know, and we launched from our home. We had no amenities. We had the company suffered against shoestring budgets. We lost partners. Some were forced out. We had disputes ourselves, and the dot-com bubble collapsed between 1999 to 2001. I actually foretold that, and when it happened, we were prepared. And more importantly, 70% of our competitors were whacked out because they weren't. But again, that's a tale for another day. At the end of the day with that story, I walked away from it all at the height of my ability to work for anybody I wanted. I could have knocked on ESPN, CBS, Fox, any of those companies. I'm not saying they would have hired me, but they were the ones saying, hey, once you leave this gig, call us. We need to talk. I never called. The political bug hit me hard. I was a former entrepreneur, business owner, and a Latino, and it was minorities getting involved in the current political battlefield we have today. I got angry that Democrats continued to make victims of and use minorities to further political aims that wouldn't help anyone. Despite the words they would say. Again, that's why I loathe Obama. He just flat out purposely lied to you, Black America, and all Americans. You know, people always like to say Obama this, Obama that. And you don't want to know what the ugly truth is, people. Obama has his masters just like Bush did. Gore did. You know, Clinton did. Bush Sr. did. You know, they all had their masters. You know, they're not the ones calling the shots. They're the ones we see calling the shots. Now, their party pushes things, but when those rich, elitist, multi-billionaire donors and old money want something, they find a way. And that's what we have to break. And we're never going to break and win the battle or win the war. You're always going to break him and win that battle. Then it starts again. Terrible. It's terrible. All right. So, I wanted to talk to you about the politics. Again, why I'm involved in this fight. Well, first of all, the reason we're in this fight right now, I believe, is because of social media. Social media has been around since the conception, when the internet became public, became commercially viable. Let's say that. You know, and even before the internet, there was BBS, CompuServe, then AOL. You know, AOL took it to a different level. You know, then came the commercialization of the internet, you know, classmates.com, 6degrees.com, culture specific sites. Then came Friendster, MySpace, and now Facebook, Twitter, and now it's called X, LinkedIn, and too many more to count. You know, not to mention the conservative sites, Gab, Getter, and Truth Social, which seem to be doing pretty well. And then there's Threads, which will survive for how long, I don't know, because of the massive money of Facebook, but they're dying over there. You know, it has failed to catch hold. But Twitter and Facebook brought cultural and racial politics to a brand new level, and that's both good and bad. It was good for me. You know, I was never depressed per se, but I was always like, man, where are the rest of the conservatives like me? And social media show me there are millions of us out there, that we're not alone in this battle. The problem is we don't control the politics. Minority politics are firmly controlled by Democrats and leftists and progressives who want us to be victims, who want us to blame everybody who is not a minority, i.e. Anglos, and to blame them and then to demand that we are owed. And, well, it's mostly blacks, but Latinos are starting to fall in that with all the illegals. And that's why I'm in this fight today. But X or Twitter and Facebook really brought that to the scales we're seeing now, the bad side of tribalism. And what tribalism is, when you're loyal to one tribe or one group, you know, and social media allowed us to become more tribalistic. Look, social media allowed us to follow and socialize very easily with like-minded individuals in real time. And that's not always good. I come from a fundamental family. A fundamentalist family. Let's see. My sister, my mother. Strong fundamentalists. I have plenty of relatives, strong fundamentalists. My oldest sister, my father, were very new ages. My father was not a new ager. He had a religion that's thousands of years old. And my sister and I were so much alike. She was a second mom to me. And we looked at God not quite like our fundamentalists. Mother and sisters did, though we believe in God. Do not get me wrong. You know, there are just things that separate us. But God is important in all our lives, in every member of our family. God is important to us. But in politics and tribalism, ideology comes first. You ignore the bad of your tribe and you rationalize it away while continuing a battle of hate toward opponents. These are known as Alinsky tactics, and they work. As a former liberal, yes, that's right. I used to be a former liberal. I wanted to save the world. I thought big Republicans were only for government, for business. I had no clue they were the party that was created to free the slaves, that it was a Democrat party that is actually the founding party and masters of the KKK that did what they wanted them to, that the Democrat Party are the people who introduced the Jim Crow laws, and the Democrat Party that lynched not only black Americans, my friends, but any Republican that would help them. They don't teach you that part anymore because it doesn't fit the narrative. But there were both black and white lynchings in their day, huh? Don't believe me? Look at the bleep up. Because I'm tired of the fact that we refuse to get educated as adults with nothing stopping us from picking up a book. Oh, yeah, sure. You'd rather go watch Kim Kardashian's big old booty on television than pick up a book that will make you smarter and allow you to fight back against the actual oppressors versus what somebody's telling you is oppressing you, and it's not. However, the positive of social media, my voice is being heard. Millions of conservatives are being heard, and it's incredible. We are gaining numbers and strength. And one day, if we can regain the battle and win back the school systems to teach and not indoctrinate, this country will be a much better place. But in essence, social media is really what got me going, because social media combined with the mainstream media, right around circa 2000, going full-blown leftist, no longer caring to create a charade of unbiased. They just went flat-out leftist. Y'all talk about 2020, Trump, you know, so they tried to steal the 2000 election. That's on film, on camera. You know, one of the things that infuriated me the most was when somebody watching on film holding up the Chad. Well, they didn't vote for Al Gore for president, but they voted for this Democrat for senator and this Democrat for congressman. So we have to assume that's a vote for Gore. No, that's a vote for nobody at president, and they gave it to Gore. They were stealing an election. What's worse are the corrupt judges. If you talk about anybody who should be taken out to the woodshed, never to be seen again, it's an activist judge. They sicken me. They sicken me because they create laws, and it is not in the Constitution. They have the right. They have no power. Their power comes from Congress. The only court that has its own power is the Supreme Court, because that was created through the Constitution. Or Bill of Rights, the Constitution Bill of Rights. I always look at them as one. God, I need to reread that myself. But you get my point. You know? And at the end of the day, that's why our world is such a terrible place. Look at the trials on Trump. I argue with my partner. Because he will, everything I say that they're doing to Trump, he will say, the duopoly's doing to my libertarians. No, they're not. My point being, he's willing to say that when it benefits him, but when he, with his TDS, he refuses to acknowledge simple truths. That's how TDS works. That's how ideology works. What makes me different is I'm not a Republican Party member. Or rather, I'm not a Republican in their values. I am a conservative with conservative values. I want to teach you how to fish, so you leave me the bleep alone, and I know you're going to be able to catch just as many fish as I could because I taught you. But anyway, that's what got me involved in politics. Once I saw social media, where it was going, once I saw the mainstream media, and I saw the mainstream media in 1990, in social media I saw it happening as it began to get bigger and bigger in the different platforms, but the different platforms that were birthed, you know, they all did the same thing, you know. And here's the thing about politics, even though I come from the sports world, politics is in every aspect of our lives. We may not see it, but it's there, including sports. And it went from an every so often event in sports where politics got involved, where politics and sports intertwined, to where sports became another leftist propaganda outlet. And being a political junkie, having come for sports, it was just a natural fit. When I was young, I wanted to save the world. I was a liberal. You know, I didn't look at skin color. It was more of this party helps the working class, the Democrats. This party helps only businesses, the businesses that come to mind, corporations. Both were farthest from the truth. And if you actually take time to look at some of these free public documents, you're going to see most of your progressive Democrat candidates that you support, they're bought and paid for by corporate donor dollars. It's there in black and white. But I get it. You're ignorant because you've been indoctrinated. But prove me wrong. Go look at it. Then let's talk. Because until then, you're nothing but sheep spewing out your master's words. Go do the research. Prepare for battle with your own ammunition. And let's go at it. Because I know I'll win. I've already studied the numbers, the results, the outcomes. So, I was a liberal. I went to my first liberal meeting. It was done by a returning student, if I remember correctly the term, meaning he was in his 30s, gone to work in the real world, came back to get his degree. I respect those people. I am one of those people myself. And so I was there, though. I was 19, 20, I guess, freshman class president. I took a year off to party and save money. I enjoyed the party more than saving the money. So, and I was going to register to become a Democrat that day. Well, how do I say this? My grandmother as some of you know, when she first came to the States when I was alive, she was rocking on the couch. I'm walking down the street. I'm a kid. You know, two Anglos next to me. They go, "Who's the N-word on your porch?" The other guy had seen her, been told already. "Oh, she's a good N-word. That's his grandmother." I turned around and said, "What's an N-word?" I had no freaking clue. You know, so needless to say, my grandmother, if her and I were walking on the street, people would not know we are related, and they would see her as black and me as white, and yet we're both Latinos from the same blood. Woo! Look at that. Never fear. And he just started to go right into his speech that Republicans were, every woe of the black man was because of the Republican Party. So I raised my hand, and I go, "Well, what about Latinos?" And I raised my hand asking, because I'm thinking of myself and my black grandmother and how different we are. He goes, "Oh, they're doing the same thing to brown people."
"I'm a light-skinned Latino."
That's what was going on in my mind, actually. And I sat there and said, "Man, I know a lot of lazy blacks. I know a lot of lazy white people. I have a lot of lazy relatives." It's like, oh, my God. I'm a Republican. That's what I said in my head at that moment. I did not realize I was a conservative. I had actually never heard the term. I was literally a political virgin. You know, I had been around politics in the sense of seeing it on TV, but I got involved my freshman year in politics. Boom, just shoot me now. But Joe Biden was the first presidential candidate I met and shook hands, and I loved him. You know, why? Because just like everybody else, we shook hands, and he seemed to care. Only for 2 months later, he has a dropout for plagiarism. Oh, man. But regardless, I realized eventually I was conservative, you know, and that's what cemented me, but I laid low. I was what you call a, what do they call those people? A plant, you know, one of those assets where you wake up at a certain time, because after that, you know, came my learning. You know, I left college to travel, went into the military, did nonprofits. Afterwards, at the same time, I was going full-time to college while working full-time. Then I did the entrepreneurship, but I was always a political junkie. I was actually freshman class president at my college, you know. So I was learning my wares of what I would end up being a future battle. I guess what angers me is the Democrat Party wants to blame one group for all of society's ills, and that's not logical, nor is it true. I learned teamwork as a youth in a military town. My teammates were all white, black, Latin, Latino, whatever. They were there because it's a military town. You know, so I looked at that immediately as a big lie, because we can grow up together, love one another, and work together. You know? And the reason I started this venture is because of my past life. I haven't even told you about my mother. God bless that little Asian-looking woman. We have Asian. I'm 99.9% sure. There's a picture of an Asian grandfather or something. And her mother, her father, who I've never met, was Asian. But there's like a Chinese side of our Panamanian family. And my mom doesn't talk to them about that much because of racism towards my grandmother. So I've seen it all. And through it all, my mother, as she's beating me with a belt, pinching my arm, telling me this is for your own good, I knew she deeply loved me. And all she wanted was the best. All she wanted was the best for everybody. And the stories you'll eventually hear about her, how she's helped hundreds of people to live their own American dream. So all of this is what pushed me into politics and the tribalism. Because I got to tell you, white America, yeah, they were racist. They were bad at one time. But the percentage isn't even 1% of racism from Anglos in this country. Did you know from, I want to say 2014 to 2016 or 2010 to 2016, there were over 400 fake race, or there were over 400 race hoaxes? And not one of those persons was tried for a hate crime, and they should have. So there's a lot with the data. And that's why I'm in this fight. You me Latinos, my brethren Latinos, and to my fellow Black Americans, we will never rise above anything as long as we look at ourselves as the victim. Because when you look at yourself as the victim, you're taking all responsibility off yourself. And when you do that, you will not achieve the American dream. It's as simple as that. And I am here to expose progressive leftist lies. And if you want to expose our side, you're right. Go ahead. Go check out my ex-timeline. Go check out my company, or the company, my partner and I, our company's timeline. And I jump on him about this. Because as I said, certain people will not knock their own. I'm like, you look at my timeline. I knock everybody who is not helping the American constituent, the American citizen, the hardworking American. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian. I will call your nasty bleeping, you know what, out if I see that. Look, everybody loves Jim Jordan. He's useless. He's a blowhard. Mitch McConnell has betrayed us. Paul Ryan, oh my God, that guy's a cuck if there ever was one. You know, a Boehner. Every Democrat has, starting from Obama on down. They're no different. You know, and the Libertarians, they can't convince anybody to vote for them. It's easy to complain from the sideline and play the moral, the morality card on your soapbox. Why? You're not sitting there making these hard decisions. And here's the thing about a Libertarian. They are the biggest statists around. You look at their history in elections. When their guy loses, they all go home and they don't vote for anybody. When you talk to them, only they have the right answers. A bunch of blowhards. And I like them. Trust me. But again, here I am. Unvarnished truth. They're blowhards who can't get anybody elected but want to tell me what to do. And they look at the world in freaking black and white. When is the world ever in black and white? It's not. But there you have it. There you have it, my friends. That is part of the tale of my upbringing and why I got into politics, because I learned how to work with my fellow brethren Americans, whether they were black, white, Latino, or whatever. I work with various religions. Granted, a Sikh, the Hindus, all those, they were in the minority. You know, if you ran across one of them, it was a shocker because they were allowed to wear their stuff. And shocker just because nobody else could. You know? Oh, man. You know, so I did that in the military. Those lessons I took to a nonprofit, and I continue to help people. I worked, and I'll tell you, at the Alzheimer's Association, and there's no greater joy than helping somebody. There is no greater joy, and you fight back the tears too, of seeing a caregiver with tears in their eyes because you've managed to find them somebody to watch, a qualified person to watch over their loved one who has dementia, so they can just go have anywhere from 2 to 4 hours of freedom. Oh my God, it breaks my heart still. Broke my heart when I saw my wife's mother like that. Breaks my heart on anything. And you know, so it taught me to help people. So I am a crass, crude alpha male, but God bless my mother. She instilled me the will to want to help. And I don't know why that got instilled in me. I'm just happy it is. And let me tell you this. I am no saint. I've got a skeleton of closets because of stupidity brought on by youth. And the machismo you get from being in the military. So I am no saint. But I know this. If I can succeed with the American dream, a 5'7" Latino who helped create a brand new industry, who helped a nonprofit become a company that makes an actual difference in their community, to get elected, to help make decisions that brought jobs to my district or to my community. It's like, I've lived the American dream and I'm not done. You can check out this podcast, not only at Grumblings Media, but at YouTube and Rumble under our Grumblings Media profile name, as well as traditional outlets, Spotify, Pandora, Apple, and Google. My friends, it's been a great pleasure. And until next time, I bid you adieu.